Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I want to thank you for joining us for another special bonus episode. Raise your hand if you seem to always be looking for a better way to conduct your environmental monitoring and testing. I see you. I see all of you, because finding the best environmental control program is one of those things that everyone producing safe food spends a lot of time thinking about. It's a complicated and arduous process to identify and test your way to having a better grip on where in your processing environment pathogens are hiding. To discuss this with us is David Acheson and Ben Catchman. But before we turn this over to Food Safety Magazine's editorial director, Barbara Van Renterham, here's what you should know about David and Ben. Dr. David Acheson is the president and CEO of the Acheson Group. David has had a long and distinguished career in the food industry, probably best known for his work with the FDA, where he held several positions, including Associate Commissioner for Foods, which gave him an agency-wide leadership role for all food and feed issues, including health promotion and nutrition. After his time with the FDA, Dr. Acheson was a partner at Levitt Partners and managed Levitt Partners' global food safety solutions. In 2013, he founded the Acheson Group, a consulting firm which provides strategic advice as well as recall and crisis management support to food companies and ancillary technology companies on a global basis on all matters relating to food safety and food defense. Dr. Acheson works with many food and beverage companies globally to assist them in managing the complexity of modern food safety. This includes both well-established global companies as well as technology providers, startup businesses, and private equity firms. Dr. Ben Catchman leads the research and development of sample preparation and assay development at Pathogen DX, a Scottsdale, Arizona-based company which provides disruptive DNA-based pathogen testing technology and solutions for the cannabis, botanical, food, and agricultural industries. Prior to joining Pathogen DX, Dr. Catchman was a principal investigator at Ekron Systems, where he led all clinical research, regulatory pathway implementation, assay development, and biomarker studies. He was also the co-founder of Flex Biotech, where he led the development of novel OLED-based molecular diagnostic assay platforms. Dr. Catchman received a Bachelor of Science degree in microbiology from Indiana University before carrying out graduate research at Arizona State University. Okay, now, here's Barbara, David, and Ben.
Well, I first want to welcome both of you to the podcast today. David, it's great to have you back on. And Ben, welcome for your first podcast with us. I'm excited to speak with you both about the importance of environmental testing and food processing. So let's get started. So David, maybe you can start us off by providing your 30,000-foot perspective on the importance of environmental monitoring and testing from a regulatory viewpoint.
No, sure, Barbara, and pleasure to be with you again, and thanks for inviting me. Environmental testing, if we look at it through a regulatory lens, there's been a very distinct evolution in its importance over the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years. I think multiple outbreaks and situations have made it very clear from a regulatory perspective that microbial contamination in your post-process environment is a real risk. This evolved as we recognize, probably maybe the poster child that really changed this is our old friend Peanut Corporation of America, which we've talked about many times, and is a poster child for many regulatory changes. But it kind of was another one of these things. It wasn't a new issue, but it's a good talking point. And I think the recognition that maybe that was the catalyst that drove regulatory change, Barbara. But if we look at the bigger picture and sort of say, well, how often have we seen, for example, particularly Listeria monocytogenes in ready-to-eat foods? in environments where we believe, and I think correctly, that the processing itself has been thorough. So you've got a raw product, you've got raw ingredients, they've gone through some sort of a kill step, a cook step, it's robust, it's validated, comes out the other end, and it's microbiologically free. And yet when it goes in the packet, the tube, the jar, whatever it is, there's either salmonella got in it or listeria got in it. And what's that all about? And the reality is that there was just an increasing recognition that it was a post-process contamination event. FDA, frankly, didn't have the authority to get into this. The Food Safety Inspection Service regulating meat and poultry products have been in this space for a lot longer. And, you know, if we continue to wind the clock back historically, and I'm going to block on the date, but I want to say it was something like 1996 when Bill Maher, if that's the right term, what was it? The hot dog company, it's not Bill Maher. It was a hot dog company that got into trouble because of listeria in hot dogs, caused a significant outbreak. FSIS was all over that, and that led to a whole bunch of change on the FSIS side, including the industry responding by adding formulations, changing formulations, putting inhibitors in product, and they basically dealt with it that way. It's like, yeah, we'll try to control it, but if it gets in there, we're not going to let it grow. And that sort of approach then shifted over into recognizing that, you know, there were a lot of FDA regulated products where it was the same problem. We were getting listeria in there. The option of adding inhibitors wasn't there. And particularly in the context of, you know, the types of foods that we were finding it. And at the same time, of course, as always happens in the food safety world, you've got other dimensions like consumers saying, hey, we want clean food. Don't add more preservatives. Get the ones that are in there out. So, you know, there was kind of like a perfect storm against that as a strategy, particularly on the FDA side. I think to come back to the original thought, PCA then kind of sort of tipped the apple cart, and much of what they did contributed, along with all this backdrop and other factors, into your original point, was like, what's the regulatory change? And the regulatory change was essentially giving the FDA statutory authority in 2011 with FSMR to require it. And then, as we know, in 2016, when large facilities had to be compliant, at that point, it became a requirement. And then it went from there. So it's absolutely, you know, it's a very hot regulatory topic. It continues to be a problem. And through all of this, sort of one final point on this is in this evolution, we created a new word, swabathon, which is like, you know, it was not a word we bandied around 20 years ago. People have looked at it and said, what the heck's that? And now when you talk to anybody in the food industry and say, hey, have you had a swabathon? They say, no, not yet. And somebody will put their hand up and say, yeah, we've had two. And we all know what it means. And it's when, you know, the regulators show up with their coolers and they're not full of beer, they're full of swabs, and they have a swabbing party at your expense and unfortunately find stuff and the whole flipping over to industry best practice. Our mission is to find it before they do and get on top of it before they do. So as usual, Barbara, long-winded historical anecdotal answer to a very simple question.
Well, you know, you mentioned that controls are in place to generate a product that is microbiologically free, but then something happens. So what do you think is going on in the food processing environment from a microbiological perspective? How, you know, what's going on that it's, is it a process step that is out of control? Is it just the ubiquitous nature of something like listeria in the environment? All of the above? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes it is a process failure. The regulations require, if you're regarding that process as a microbiological control, to make sure it's validated and that there's an ongoing verification and monitoring program. And I think historically, for sure, that has happened, undercooked product. But I don't think that's the norm. I think in today's environment, processing and all the electronics and controls that go with it's pretty robust. So it's more likely that the microbe has got into the product post-process. And so what's going on is, you know, if we wind it back to the bigger picture of what's the criticality of controlling all this risk. And the way I approach it is I think about it as the most important thing to have is what I call an environmental control program. And the environmental control program is a multifaceted SOP, basically, that is looking at all the ways that unwanted microbes might get into your ready-to-eat area or high-risk area, depending what you call it. And, you know, that might be movement of drain water, it might be air, it might be people, it might be equipment, it might be product. There are many things that will allow Listeria monocytogenes or Salmonella to get into that area. And your environmental control program should be a robust system looking at all of these different factors and putting controls in place. That may be controlling the movement of product, equipment, people, air, drains, all of those things. And when that program is working, you're basically doing your best to keep these unwanted bugs out of the place that's most critical, your high risk or your ready to eat area. The programs, we're not dealing with sterile environments. We're not dealing with sort of BL3 type or BL4 type pharmaceutical level operations. It's a food plant. It's not sterile. They will get in. So our goal is to keep them at the door or keep them in zone three, keep them over under the entry point, keep them away from the equipment and obviously critically keep them off the food contact surfaces. Now, the environmental control program is really key. And that, to me, the fundamental, that's what controls the risk. The environmental monitoring program, which is where you've got a robust swabbing exercise, to me is the verification that control program is working. And it's all about that. And your environmental monitoring program obviously needs to be looking in the right places with the right level of due diligence. We've shifted very much in recent years from we'll swab not to find it to a good plant is we'll swab to find it. That's fundamentally a philosophical difference. And you know, there's been many companies years ago you talk to and say, well, we did 1,000 swabs in the last month and we got all negatives. We're tip top, we're brilliant. And you go into a little bit of detail and of course they clean the area with alcohol before they swab it. So, you know, it's like, of course they're all negative. So you drive to get negativity. I think today's forward-leaning company is driving towards finding it. And I think the way this happens is that your environmental control program, which is not absolute, it's not watertight, stuff gets in there. And your whole mission is to find it early, control it, eradicate it. At all costs, try to make sure you don't wind up with a resident strain. Which certainly the regulators, particularly FDA, regard as a sort of as failure of sanitary conditions in general. And your environmental monitoring program and looking for it is all about the verification that control program is working. And it isn't watertight. It isn't 100%. So you kind of need both.
Right. So before we turn things over to Ben, what was the primary impetus behind your interest in Pathogen DX and their approach to environmental monitoring?
Fundamentally, when I learned about Pathogen DX and chatted with various people there, I was struck by a couple of things. First of all, the basic technology was intriguing because it was a little bit like one-stop shopping, but the possibility to get multiple answers, as I understood it in my initial conversations. You take a swab and I'm talking here about environmental testing particularly, you take a swab, and we've talked about salmonella, we've talked about listeria, and obviously within listeria, there's mono, which we worry about from a human pathogen perspective, but we've got all the other species, which are typically indicators of programs that are or not working well. And what was intriguing was the simplicity of a single swab by turning different parts of the system on or off, and Ben can speak to this much more eloquently than I, allows you to, with that single swab, get one answer or get multiple at the same time for the same price. The other things which obviously are appealing is the accuracy seemed robust and good, which is important. The speed was exciting in that it was typically, you know, like you do it in a shift, you don't have to wait 2 days. So we had accuracy, we had speed, we had simplicity, and we had versatility, and it was rather attractive. And then layered on top of all of that was just the enthusiasm of the people in the company, which is always refreshing and was just, you know, enjoyable to work with, and what I thought sounded like a good product, and they were looking for some help to navigate the food safety space. So why not?
That's great. So Ben, let's bring you into the conversation. Can you provide our listeners with an overview of the EnviroXF technology and what its strengths are? David kind of alluded to it a little bit, but.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yeah, David, you know, gave a nice introduction to what the technology is, and in general, most of our assays look about the same. So I'll kind of describe the EnviroXF assay that's AOAC approved. But in general, you can think of all of our assays kind of being in the same workflow. So what's kind of unique about our platform compared to other platforms is, one, at least for this swabbing, we don't have to do enrichment. So you can take a swab, you can put it back into the container that has its neutralization broth, you can ship it off to a lab, and you can get your result back in a single shift. So you're really getting an accurate snapshot of what's present in your environment at the time, rather than having to enrich, which might change the composition of the bacterial organisms you're interested in. So sometimes you can have enrichment bias, which can affect your population growth. So one of our goals with our products is to limit the amount of enrichment. And in this product, since it's a small volume, we're able to entirely eliminate enrichment and still get accurate results for Listeria species, Listeria monocytogenes, and Salmonella species, at least in this AOAC certified assay. And then on top of that, we can mix and match organisms and content depending on the environment we're looking at. So some companies might only be, for example, we had a company down in Nogales that we're working with this product. For some of the rooms, they only care about looking at Listeria monocytogenes. For some, they want to see Listeria species and Salmonella species. So you can provide them these results, which is important for these companies from a regulatory standpoint, that they want to present only what they're interested in asking for, and not more information sometimes can be an issue for them. So we're able to provide as much or as little information as they want in the same platform, same test, same sample, without having to do multiple different enrichment types, multiple different sample preps.
So how does the cost savings compare with other offerings on the market if you had to buy maybe 5 different tests from someone as opposed to doing kind of everything in one with yours?
So the cost of our EnviroXF assay is about $16, and you'll get the results for 3 different organisms, Listeria species, Listeria monocytogenes, and Salmonella species. This is in comparison to traditional plating or other assays where you're going to have to, one, wait for answers for a lot longer period of time, and the cost is about $10 to $15 higher for those additional assays where you're getting longer time to result, and you're getting less specificity out of those assays.
So if you're speaking to a potential customer and explaining why they should be interested in your product, what are the main selling points you like to leave that person with in terms of why they should consider your product?
Conventional HACCP programs might use on the spot, a rapid test similar to ATP to identify whether their instruments or processes are clean in the moment. Where this test really falls in is kind of in the realm of conventional microbiology, or where food safety is really heading into shifting from microbiology into molecular biology techniques. And where this assay really has its strengths is not only in the lower cost for multiple detection of multiple organisms, but also in the flexibility to improve the assay in the future, add additional content, and then your speed to result, where you're getting a result in a single shift rather than waiting for 24, 48, 72 hours to get the same answer using conventional techniques.
Right. So what you're saying is ATP is fast, but you have no specificity with that. It could be some non-pathogen that's just hanging around that would never be a food safety issue. But with your test, you're getting much faster results for much lower cost and some specificity and accuracy in the testing.
Correct.
Great. Now, you mentioned that this test was had AOAC approval. Are there other validations that you've been able to get?
For this test specifically, it's just gone through AOAC approval, and right now we're in a beta test with some food producers in the state of Arizona as well. So they're doing some preliminary tests.
So as we wrap up today, what is the primary message that you'd like to communicate to our listeners with respect to environmental monitoring programs? So David, why don't you start us?
I think the primary message, Barbara, is one of its criticality in managing risk in any production facility where one is making food that is perceived or utilized by consumers as ready to eat. From a regulatory perspective, from a recall perspective, a brand risk perspective, this is absolutely one of the hottest spots and areas of greatest risk. It's a huge regulatory focus. My feeling is that Pathogen DX's solution to this is one that hits lots of positive points. It's fast, it's inexpensive, it's accurate, and it's versatile. And you put that together, and that's a very powerful tool. So it's a very relevant area, and I think we've got a good solution to help manage that risk.
Great. Your thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, David said it really well early on. You know, I mean, HACCP programs are really designed to detect things before they get into the food. And that's really what we're trying to provide, is this highly accurate, highly sensitive test that can help these factories, these food producers, manufacturers, be able to detect harborage organisms prior to them getting into the food, you know, wherever they might be. And that's really the goal of this assay, to provide that, as well as additional specificity beyond what is traditionally been done in traditional microbiology platforms.
Great. It sounds like the mantra is fail early. If you're going to have a problem, you better know about it sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to thank both of you for being on Food Safety Matters with me today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to David and Ben for this very informative discussion, and Pathogen DX for sponsoring this episode. For more information on how Pathogen DX can help you with your environmental monitoring, visit their website, pathogendx.com/food-ag. That's pathogendx.com/food-ag. We hope you enjoyed this special episode of Food Safety Matters, and we'll talk to you soon.